Hey, hey, this is Allie, and welcome to the Allie Worthington Show. It's where we gather, learn, share stories, and have a great time. Every week, I'll be chatting with a friend who I know, who I like, and I respect, and I want to learn something from. And after we have that discussion, we are going to have coaching time. So I'm going to be answering your questions about life, about faith, and about business. Welcome to the show today. I'm with the fabulous Dr. Allison Cook. She's a psychologist, and she's hopefully a future bestie of mine. I think that she is absolutely brilliant. We're talking about her new brilliant book, The Best of You, and she's giving us some great insights from that, how to break free from painful patterns, how to mend your past, and how to discover your true self and God. You are going to absolutely love this one. Now, no coaching today because Allison is so brilliant. We had quite a bit to say, and I am in my last leg of travel for the year. I have two more trips left. This weekend, I am in Flagstaff, Arizona at the Northern Arizona Women's Retreat. And get this, I'm bringing Jack with me because we're going to see the Grand Canyon. We're going a day early. We've never been. We're so excited. I've really had fun this year just figuring out where I can work in fun and have a great time with work. I'm not going to travel as much next year, so I'm having a blast really living it up with all the events this fall. And I have two big things to share with you this week. Starting in December, I'm giving away 5 free coaching calls again. Now, when I'm not traveling and I have a bunch of downtime, I love to do free coaching calls with executives and business owners. If you're a business owner, if you're an executive, if you're a business owner who just needs a little help getting your business to the next level, I would love to be able to help you. You can apply at allieworthington.com/free coaching. Just free coaching altogether. It'll also be on the show notes on my website too. I'll be doing calls in December and January. I love getting to help so many people. So with me not on the road in December and January, I'll be able to do it. Now, I'm equally excited to announce we are accepting applications for the 2023 interns. So you can only imagine, every week I have so many requests to pick my brain or to learn from me, and I would love to be able to help everybody I can. There's just not time. That's why I built the internship program. This is not for high school kids. It's not for college kids. This is for adults. I have women who are stay-home moms. I have attorneys. I've had professors and therapists and graphic designers and more in my internship program. In this program, you get to work with me. You get to learn from me. You get coached one-on-one directly from me. So if you are a go-getter and you would love to be part of my team, you would love to learn what you don't know yet. You would love to develop your skills and you'd love to get insights from me, join. You can apply to the internship. There's a banner at the top of my site. You can go to Allie Worthington. It's right there on the top. Or you can go straight to allieworthington.com/interns. We are in the process right now. We're already going through applications. We're going to make decisions in December and we will get started together in January. Now for the final segment of the show, I'm bringing you a movie that you may or may not want to see. We shall see. Okay, without further ado, here's my new friend, Allison. Allison, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
The great thing about a podcast is, especially when you have your own podcast, is you get to just look out on the horizon and bring your friends on and people you want to be friends with, you bring them on. And instead of the old days being like, would you like to have coffee with me? Now I go, would you like to come on my podcast? Because I would like to be your friend. So thank you for coming.
I love that. We're having coffee together. It's so true. Exactly. I love that.
Okay. So I'm so fascinated by everything you do. You're a woman like me who does a lot of things. You have your PhD, you're seeing clients, you write books, you have this great website and a podcast. Tell me about what happened in your life where I would imagine you, as you were getting your PhD, planned, I'm going to counsel, I'm going to teach. Well, tell me about the flow as to where you got to where you are now.
It was definitely not a linear path. I think about halfway into my doctoral work, I was like, I don't think I'm cut out to be a professor. I love teaching. I love writing. I love seeing clients, but the rigor required to my friends who are academics, I just, you know, bow to, you know, it is, there's a rigor that's required. Not so much the rigor of the academic piece, but just the amount of effort they have to put in, what is the burden that is placed on folks who are doing that, is a lot. And I knew I needed a little more autonomy. I just knew myself. I was like, I need a little more autonomy. So I went on and I started practicing as a therapist, had a family, and then kind of started writing on the side as my kids got older, started writing a little more, you know, just kind of as the different seasons of life. All of a sudden, I looked at my life and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm doing those three things. I'm teaching through my podcast, I'm writing, and I see clients. I'm getting to do all three, but more on my own terms, on my own timetable. So I'm super grateful for the way that worked out. I don't think I could have designed it better, but it's really worked out exactly what I love to do.
I love that. I love all the opportunities that we have to get to do what we want to do and get to help people. Talk about your latest book, your latest project. What was that like for you? Because what I always like to hear is, what in your life happened that made you produce this latest piece of work?
There's two answers to that. The 20-year answer is that I was someone who in college, raised in a Christian home, really, really committed my life to Christ in college and was just kind of like, someone used to say, I can't remember who said it, but so spiritually minded, I was sort of no earthly good. You know, I really wanted to just live so literally this idea of dying to self, right? That for about 10 to 15 years, I essentially cut off aspects of myself that was not what God was asking me to do. So part of me was really interested and fascinated in humanity. I loved helping other people. I intuitively got people. I had sort of instinctive. I was always the counselor. I was always the person, you know, your friends came to. I kind of got things. So that was a natural course of study. But again, it's God and others. It's not me, right? Gotcha. I'm learning about other people. I'm learning about God. Me, that's a brick wall. We don't think about ourselves. We don't focus on ourselves. That's selfish. And that was really how I tried to live until about halfway into my doctoral program, my early 30s, I broke down. I mean, I was like, this is not sustainable. I backed myself into a corner. All my friends are going on and living lives. And I was like, I don't know how to be in healthy relationships. I don't know how to take, you know, how to get what I need. I don't even know what I really want. And so I took 3 years essentially kind of off of my doctoral work to go through my own healing process. You know, it's the classic, you know, the therapist who has to take the mirror and turn it back on herself and learn. And I still worked and I still, but I took time off from my studies, went back and finished, but had to discover my own self and that God wants me. So that's kind of the big picture backdrop of the message of the book, which is about finding your true self. And that, you know, there's three relationships. There's our relationship to God, to other people, and there's that relationship to ourself. And it is incredibly important. And it's the one that often gets bypassed. We talk about like self-care, and a lot of times that's just about taking care of your body, but this is a deeper, really becoming your whole self. And so that just became all of a sudden my, you know, just, I was like passionate about, because I just saw so many women. Then all these women are coming into my counseling office. Same message, same thing. I'm doing so many things for other people. I love God. Why am I so empty? Why am I burnt out? Why am I so depressed? Why am I so anxious? You know, and it's like, well, we've got to turn the mirror on you. And that's not wrong for a little bit. And so that's kind of the big picture. And then right as the idea was coming to me, I had a medical crisis that I write about in the book that sort of forced me to go regroup, go back through the process of healing, and kind of even underscored the message that much more.
Wow, that's so, so powerful. I have to say, I think it's so surprising just to hear your story of I forgot myself, right? And then think about you as an expert. You're an expert in training, but you're still an expert. I mean, you had your master's by then, right? Mm-hmm. Talk about the women that come into your office and talk about what comes into play. Is it my frame of reference is from a Christian perspective, obviously, right? Do you see women who come from a Christian perspective kind of putting themselves last more than other women? Talk about how our faith plays into that.
Yes, I do. I primarily work with women of faith. I see two extremes. I see in our culture, I see the sort of, it's only about you, you know, sort of the let's just ditch everything and make ourselves, let's only follow my inner self, right? That's not what I'm getting at here. But on the Christian side of things, for women coming out, especially, you know, I think even younger women, but especially women 30s, 40s, 50s, really internalized this message of die to self in a really unhealthy way. Always focus on other people. It's better to put others first. You should be last. It's like, that has been, especially among women of faith, that has been internalized in a really toxic way in my experience of 2 decades working with women. It's not a healthy message. It's not a healthy way to go into relationships. If you don't bring yourself into a relationship, relationships require two whole people to negotiate. I mean, it's hard. You know, you think about marriage, you have to be able to bring yourself in a healthy way to the table. So otherwise you are going to get resentful. You are going to burn out. You are going to feel invisible. And that's just what I would see over and over again, especially for women coming out of faith communities. And so that really, yeah. And then that was, had been my own story. So it was just like, okay, there's something here. And then I'm seeing the culture and I get it kind of going too far. Let's just throw everything out. And it really only matters what I want and what I feel in any given moment. And it's like, no, we got to hold that intention with God and with other people, but it is a factor. It is an important part of that. We think of Jesus' words, love others as yourself. There's an assumption there that there's a you that is showing up, you know, that you know who that you is that you're bringing into your relationships. But a lot of women don't understand that and don't feel like they have permission to do that work.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons I was so excited to talk to you, because you have that integration of theology and psychology. Mm-hmm. So what's kind of a first step, light bulb moment for women to go, wait a minute, I'm not all of a sudden going to become a narcissist.
That's right.
If I step up and start taking care of myself and go, that's wait right. a minute, my needs are valid too. Yes. I think we're so black and white. We're either... Yes. We're worms, or we're going to turn into raging narcissists. Where's the healthy middle?
Exactly. I use the word doormat. I was like, you know, we feel like we should be doormats. And I look to the life of Jesus, to be honest, because if he's our model, he's not a doormat. Jesus is not at all, right? So I think for me, the light bulb moment, it's, I talk in chapter one about this question, what do you want? That as I'm counseling women, they're terrified to consider that question. It feels selfish. Yeah. It feels, what if I can't get what I want? It feels impossible. What if I don't know what I want? I've never been taught to consider what I want. And so I always go right into this chart. I kind of, it's like there's selfishness on one hand, which is it's all about me. There's selflessness on the other hand, which is it's never about me. And there's this, what I call selfhood. It's really a term in psychology, becoming your true self, selfhood, which is it's about what I need. And it's about what you need. And together, when we both come to the table as our true selves, we will negotiate something far more beautiful. Far, you know, that's the picture of marriage we get, right? But it's also true in friendships, in all of our relationships. If I'm bringing who I am and you're bringing who you are, we have to work together. It's not one of us being a doormat to someone else. It's not one of us saying my way or the highway to somebody else. Yeah. It's harder in a way. It's harder work to be like, look, this is who I am. This is who you are. Let's honor and respect each other. And let's each together help each other become more and more of our true selves. And I kind of walks you through, first of all, figuring it out for yourself, but then how to bring that into your relationships in a way, as you're saying, that isn't narcissistic. It's not all about me, but also isn't me being a doormat. You know, and it requires the fruit of the spirit. It requires patience. It requires gentleness. It requires self-control. But self-control isn't, I'm just going to pretend like this doesn't matter. Self-control is, this does matter to me. I'm going to be patient, right? That's different than I'll just neglect myself or forget about what I need. I'll be like, no, this does matter to me. And I'm going to honor the timing of when it will be appropriate. You know, there's nuance to this conversation.
Oh, yeah. One of the things that I taught in my last book, Standing Strong, was if you consider yourself a worm, how is that going to help the kingdom of God? You know, if you're constantly putting yourself down and constantly saying, no, I'm not good enough. I can't do this. I don't matter. How is that going to help us? You know, if I had to take one of my children to a neurosurgeon and I walked up to that neurosurgeon prepping for surgery and said, you know, tell me everything's going to be okay. And then the neurosurgeon goes, you know, it's not me. It's all the Lord. And I just hope that the Lord shows up today. I'm going to be like, can I get another neurosurgeon in here?
Exactly. Right? Like,
but that's the way we do with everything. I was on a call with my team and somebody on my team, bless her. I feel bad for being harsh with her, but she was asking for advice. We're on this big group call. And then she was like, I'm just going to be so honored to be there. And I was like, don't give me that socially acceptable, humble Christian woman stuff, you don't need to just put yourself down and be like, I'm just happy to be in the room. Yeah. Like go in there. The Lord wants you to do big things.
I know.
But it's so scary, I think, for Christian women. I didn't grow up in the church. So for me, I walked in as an adult, well, an older teenager to the church world. And I was like, what? Why are all the women playing small? What is going on? I've been sucked into it at certain parts of my life because I thought that was what I was supposed to do, as opposed to it's just a weird cultural phenomenon. Do you want to speak to how some of scripture has been misunderstood where women think we should play small?
Yeah, I want to say to your point, when I met my now husband, he didn't grow up in Christian subculture. He came to Christ later in life. He was so confused. He's like, why do you keep trying to please me? And I talk about it in the book. He didn't like it. He's like, you're a really talented, strong woman. Why don't you just be that woman? And I was like, but no one's ever, that's not what it was just so disorienting, but so life-giving that to have someone. And I do talk about that a lot in the book, these ways we've been taught. And I think some of the key messages, I mean, it gets right back to the whole, Jesus said, deny yourself. And I kind of unpack that. I also think it's really interesting that a lot of times we hear those messages from men. It's just true. You look at your teenage boys and you look at your teenage girls. Your teenage boys are kind of like, this is what I want. This is what I see it. We raised our girl to have a voice and she's and it's like, it's in the air we breathe. And so when we go to church though, and we hear deny yourself, the men kind of hear it as, oh yeah, I probably shouldn't be so selfish. The women hear it as, oh my gosh, I do think it's a different, and we see Jesus giving a different connotation of that message to women, to people on the margins, to people who've been hurt. He calls them forward, right? He has different messages for different people. And yes, we're supposed to deny our selfishness 100%. That, he says that, but that does not mean denying your God-given self. And so that's one of the ones, when you look scripturally, Jesus also says, come, follow me and come alive to yourself. And we see so many examples, especially with folks who've been downtrodden, who felt like worms. Those are the people he's calling to lift up. He's not trying to, so that's a big one. The turn the other cheek is one I go through in the book. A lot of women have been taught, you should just turn the other cheek, love them into change. It doesn't work, and I don't believe that is what that message means. And I unpack that one, that there's actually a very subversive kind of undertone. If we look at everything Jesus did, where turning the other cheek is a way of kind of saying, look, you can hit me again, but look me in the face when you do it. It's a little bit subversive. It's not, oh, I'll just keep taking it. It's, you've hit me here. Sure. Go ahead. Hit me on the next one. It's not literal. I don't want women to take abuse, but I do want them to hear it doesn't mean the way that we've heard it, which is just take the pain. It's more shrewd than that. It's, I see what's happening and here's what's happening. I'm going to name what's happening. You can do it again if you like, but it's shame on you, right? It's not me just rolling over. There's so much more. I went through in chapter 6, I did a study of all these verses that talk about standing strong, to use your, it's so biblical. It's like, wow, we hear sermons on these messages. Fascinating when you really look at it. So it was fun. I had a fun time just going, oh my goodness. Like there's a lot of wise, shrewd ways that the Bible talks about not being a fool, not standing with those who are hurting you, not being wise, and the very, very nuanced ways we can do that.
Yeah, so good. Now here's, I'm going to quote you. I wrote down something that I read. You said, you can trust God and still feel anxious, lonely, overwhelmed, and broken inside. I'd love to hear you unpack that because I feel like, I think it's an accidental message from Platform, but we still get the message, perfect love casts out fear. Here's the kicker. This makes my blood boil every time I hear it. You can't feel gratitude and peace in the Lord and still be worried. Well, I'm grateful to God all the time. I feel peace in the Lord. If there's a meteor coming at my house, I'm going to be a little anxious and worried about it. I mean, it's so unrealistic. Will you just unpack that a little bit?
Yeah, I do these posts sometimes on social media on what I call spiritual bypassing. And it's like someone says to you, just pray it away, starve your fear. It's the enemy of your faith. And it's like, I mean, that's true on one level. And we still get afraid. It's just. And so in what I do in that chapter is unpack the reality of, first of all, we're whole people. We're mind, body, emotion, and spirit. And there's some spirit, things can be spiritually true and not at all. We have an emotional reality. So I talk about what I call the cocktail of codependency, the three factors. We all are dealing with childhood wounds. We have wounds. And that's a factor, right? We've got places of vulnerability within us. And that's not wrong. And those wounds don't just magically go away when we love Jesus. We go through a process of healing over and over and over again in life because new things come into our lives. Our kids get hurt. We're constantly in a process, engaging a process of moving toward wholeness. And so there's that. There's these misconstrued church messages, that do not be afraid isn't a that it's a sin to be afraid. It's a acknowledgement. Of course you're afraid.
Yeah.
It's okay. Right. That's very different when we're saying, of course you're afraid. And how we treat ourselves. Of course I'm afraid. This is scary. That's normal. Now I don't want to live out of that fear. I want to honor it though. And then when I do honor it, usually it softens. Usually it's like, this was my first book. It's like a part of me that gets to have a seat at the table, right? In the boardroom. It just doesn't get to be the one that makes all the decisions. Of course, there's anxiety. Sometimes there's grief. Sometimes there's depression. All of those things can sit side by side with the fact that God loves us and that God comes into all of it. So those are some of the things I walk you through step by step in the book, because again, those messages have been so misconstrued and why my passion for bringing psychology, which is the study of the soul, it goes hand in hand with the study of God. It's a partnership. We co-create with God. He made us that way. He doesn't just zap us with the, magic wand. It's a process of co-creating. And I think God delights when we come to, I love your example, when we come to the table with, hey, God, here's these cool things I want to bring to the table. And God's like, all right, let's together, let's do that together.
It's so good. I love how he partners with us to bring things into the world. He doesn't need us, but he chooses us to do this, which is why it's so important for us to take care of ourselves. I feel like years ago, God gave me the revelation that my job was to help Christian women live better lives, whether that's business, life, relationships, whatever it is, because there is this idea. I don't think it ever gets said. That once you get saved, you're good. You don't need to work on yourself. If you still have problems, are you really saved? Maybe if you just pray more, you'll do better. And that makes my blood boil. So if there's one thing I can do in life is just have these conversations to go, no, that's actually not how we work. God is inviting us into a process. He wants us to be healthy. He wants us to be whole. He wants us to bring our whole selves to the world because he has great work for us to do. Yeah. If women are constantly kind of giving up on parts of themselves that need healing, we're not going to be able to do all the things that God's called us to do. Talk about what that's like for women to just kind of give up on parts of themselves during a period of life.
The world misses out, on your talents, on your voice, on all that you have to contribute. Your kids miss out, your family, your friends, your community, your neighborhood. And again, we're all so different. It can look so different for all different kinds of women. I love the work that you do. Bless you. It's such important work because I think more and more women are hearing this and wanting this. But again, then you see this extreme that some of the world can, and it's like, I don't want that, but I do want to have a voice, right? And your kids need you to have a voice. Your coworkers need you. That was the biggest thing for me as a recovering people pleaser, as a recovering codependent. And I know, it's totally cliche as a therapist, right? I'm in the trenches too. I'm a woman who's internalized all these messages too. I'm also still healing. But one of the biggest things for me to realize is, oh my goodness, when I hide myself, when I make myself invisible, when I play like a doormat, it's not only bad for me, I am not bringing the best of who I am to the people I love. It's not good for them either. They're missing out on the goodness that I have to bring that takes courage to come out from hiding and really show up. And that those lessons are powerful for me. I can mark those moments when I'm like, oh my gosh, I've been shrinking. And you know what? Then I get into enabling. Then I get into how's that good for that other person? When I am really being my true self, when I'm aligned with myself, I'm empowering other people which is what helps them go on and heal and become more of who they really need to be too.
So good. So if somebody's listening going, I think this may be me. I think I may have kind of given up on a part of myself. What are some indications? What are some signs where women can go, oh, okay, I think it's time for me to work on that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say any resentment is often a sign. We kind of resent other people who were like, why do they get to do that? Why do they get to have, it's like, that's always a cue to pay attention. I think envy, resentment are always cues. What part of me is longing? The underside of that is desire. What part of me is longing? It doesn't have to be like them, but is there a desire in me I'm not fully claiming? I think burnout is an obvious one. Feeling invisible, you know, again, just like, I don't feel like people see me, right? There might be a wound underneath there or a part of you that needs your healing, your attention. That was a big one for me, just kind of feeling invisible. I was so busy, you know, helping other people, but there was a part of me that was just like, and I was like, well, I was keeping myself invisible. I needed to pay attention to that. So paying attention instead of, again, shoving them aside, spiritualizing, oh, God sees me. Well, maybe I would like a couple of other people to also see me, you know, and maybe God wants that for me too. You know, yeah. I remember I used to always pray like, oh God, it's just about you. And then there came a point where I was so lonely and I was like, actually, I would like a few other people, you know? And I was like, I think I'm going to change how I'm praying, you know? So that I think feeling voiceless, feeling like you don't know how to, and a lot of times what happens for women is they vacillate between being, you know, they'll lash out and then they feel shame, guilt, you know? And it's like, if you notice that ping pong, it's like, maybe there's a way of being more grounded in your true self so that you're able to speak up on behalf of yourself in a healthier way. And I walk you through really step-by-step how to learn how to find your voice, not so that you're the loudest person in the room, but so in those key moments, sometimes it's quiet, in those key moments, you're like, no, no, thank you. And, you know, sometimes it's just a whisper, but it's powerful because it's really genuinely coming from deep inside of you. So some of those signs, those are, you know, the other one I would, last one I would say is two things. One is numbing out, just noticing you're just giving up by, you've just almost resigned yourself. That's a sad one for me when I see that. We are worth so much more than just kind of numbing through all the various ways that we can check out. I think God wants so much more for us, so much more for us. And I guess that would be the last one.
Those are so good. I went through a period of burnout in early 21. It's funny, almost every woman that I worked with coaching at some point in 20 or 21, they hit their wall too.
Yeah,
you know, sure. Where we held it all together, and then we're just done.
Yeah.
And we all fell apart in different ways. For me, it was numb. You mentioned numbing. I still operated, you know, at a high capacity. Work was fine. I took care of the family. I did everything fine, but inside I just turned everything off.
Yeah.
Because everything was just too difficult. And that's what got me back in therapy to go, there's something wrong. I didn't even know that I had completely numbed everything out, but that was my way of dealing with everything being so hard.
Yes.
So I think that sometimes women just numb out and we don't know how to get back in touch with ourselves and we don't realize that we're doing it because we have so many people depending on us all the time. Will you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, I love that you were able to name that, right? And I think naming that self-awareness, it's not, I think sometimes we're afraid, like when I notice bitterness or resentment or numbing, boy, I'm reaching for a lot of cookies these last few weeks, you know, what is that about? We don't want to be afraid. I talk about getting curious, noticing.
Yeah.
And we don't have to fix it right away. We don't have to rush to, oh, I shouldn't be doing that. We don't have to criticize ourselves. But noticing, practicing the fact that you were aware, they were like, I'm kind of dead on the inside. I'm kind of shutting down the emotions. And instead of being like, okay, I'll just pretend, you know, it's like, I think I need to talk to somebody. So that's number two, you know, naming, noticing. And so if women are listening, going, I notice those things, you know, how do I fix it? That's immediately usually we're like, how do I fix it? Well, you may not fix it right away, but just noticing and naming it for what it is, getting curious, trying not to shame yourself or judge yourself, but just saying, gosh, Lord, notice that. Tell yourself, tell God, and then tell a safe person, whether it's a therapist, whether it's a good friend who will hold that with you, not try to fix you, but just go, you know, and I always say to women, tell people what you need. If you're noticing this, and go to your friends and say, I'm noticing that I'm kind of numb. I don't need you to fix me. I just need to name it so that you know, because I'm watching this. You know what I mean? You want someone to come alongside of you and witness that for you. But usually when we're beginning to notice, there's a process we're going to go through, whether with a therapist or whether in our journal or whether with our, you know, safe people. But that naming with curiosity, that removal of shame, and then a couple of safe people, whoever they are, just to begin to unpack what's going on. That is the journey. That's the process of becoming more whole.
That's so good. That's really powerful. For me, what happened is I realized something was really wrong and I prayed God would help me. Mm-hmm. And he said very clearly, get more help. Mm. And so I got my butt back in therapy, hired a coach again, did those things. And I had the financial privilege to be able to do it. And I'm grateful for that because I definitely have had seasons of my life where I didn't.
Yeah.
But the thing is, he said, get more help. He didn't say, you should deny yourself.
That's right.
You are a worm. Don't worry about your feelings. Just serve. You know, the That's Lord. Right. Took the time to go, you need to get more help. You need to get more help. And so I just, I want that to be a message that all women can take, whether it's like you're saying, talking to a friend, getting your book, listening to your podcast, listening and understanding and kind of letting the Lord work through us as we're learning about these things is so powerful because when women are healthy, we change the world.
Absolutely. A strong, healthy woman is, you know, I want to have coffee with every single day because it's just so, we have such amazing skills and intuition and abilities to bring to people. I love your metaphor with the neurosurgeon because I think of the soul, right? If a part of our soul is hurting, if you had a broken arm, you wouldn't, you know, God wouldn't say, well, you just need to pray more about it. You know, you would go get help. You know, it's the same with our soul. If a part of our soul is hurting, why is it any different? It's no different. You know, we need to tend to that part of our soul that's hurting, just as we would tend to a part of our body that's hurting.
So good. Now for you as an author, I love the like inside baseball talk with authors. So what surprised you when you were writing this book? There has to be something. Let's talk about the journey for you.
Yeah. It was the back and forth between creativity and linearity is what surprised me because there were times what I began to notice was, so I have that academic part of me that can just sort of lay out a sort of a linear, but then there's the creative part of me that wanted to tell a story. And creativity, you can't, it's like either you sit down, you can't force it. It's there or it's not. And so I kind of learned that. And so it was like, okay, this is a day where it's just not there. I don't have that. But what I can do is lay down some foundational structures. You know, I can get some words on the page that have to be there. And kind of learning to trust that was very interesting. Mm-hmm. And then inevitably, a day I'd be like, oh my gosh, I get it. I know how to connect these dots. And it would just be there and it would flow out of me. It's not like that every day. You know, those days I remember, I'm like, oh, that was so fun. Some days it's just the heavy labor of putting the rocks down, you know? That was surprising to me. I didn't know how that would go. I didn't know you can kind of trust that the creativity would show up, you know, get you a little rest, a little, you know, a day off, you know, a little, put your brain on the back burner and the creativity starts to spark. So that was really fun to see. And I think it'll be more fun going into my next book to remember that, oh yeah, it comes. So you don't have to beat yourself up over it when it's not there.
Yeah, it shows up. Now, what's your default self-talk?
It depends. I can go to, you know, pretty harsh, you know, inner critic. I think all of us have one to some degree, you know, kind of a, what's wrong with you? You know, you should just, you know, I have some music and some songs that I listen to. Music really helps me come out of that. So I can get myself out of it. I'm aware of it. So I can more quickly move beyond it.
That's great. Okay. I like that music works for you. Yeah. I'm a music person too.
Yeah.
Give me the right songs and everything's going to shake out pretty well.
Yeah.
Speaking of, are you ready for fun questions?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Number one, what's your Enneagram number?
Okay. So I talked to my friend, your Enneagram coach, Beth McCord, about this. I'm like, can I be a 2.5? She's like, well, I'm really a 3, but for a long, long time, I thought I was a 2 and I really bounce between the two, but I think the core is a 3.
Okay.
3 with a really strong two wing.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically 2.5.
Yeah. And to the conversation, I think as a woman growing up in Christian circles, I was conditioned to show up in the world as a 2. And so what I began to learn was, and I felt a lot of shame about the 3 parts of me. I'm not supposed to want to be an achiever. I'm not supposed to have goals, right? That's how I felt. And so that 3 part of me that's really close to home kind of figured out how to just be a really, really show up as a 2. And so it was a big deal for me to realize, oh golly, I actually am a 3. And there was some shame for me with that.
Yeah. Whenever I coach women in ministry, one of the first, I like to have people take a DISC and an Enneagram when I'm working with people. And most women in ministry will show up as a two. And I'll go, let's just work together for a little bit and then let's take it again.
Totally.
Let's just make sure.
It's so true. That conditioning is strong.
Yep. What about a song that you have on repeat right now?
I was just thinking about that when you were asking that. I listened to Adele's new song, Go Easy on Me, maybe 100 times. And to myself, you know, kind of playing it over myself. And I would just, you know, cook dinner after a tough day of writing. And just that was the song I kind of played over that. And it was really powerful to me.
I love that. I just talked to Lisa Turkhurst this morning and that was her song too.
You're kidding. That's great.
Yeah. Everybody loves that song. That's great. Yeah. What about a TV show or a movie or both? Something you're enjoying?
I started watching with my daughter over the summer who was home from college, Abbott Elementary, I think it's called.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was pretty fun. We enjoyed that. Not a lot of TV these last few weeks because I've been super busy, but more podcasts and music. But that was fun this summer.
That's great. Favorite podcast?
Oh, gosh. For fun.
It's hard to pick. I know.
I know, right? But there's all the different ones. For fun, I'll listen to like Armchair Expert or Smartless. I think they're funny.
They are.
Just when I just need to tune out. I would say, I think Kurt Thompson's got a great pod being known. I love Kurt's stuff. Mm-hmm. So those are probably some of the ones I toggle between. Kind of an extreme there, but.
That's great. What about a book that you recommend?
Recently, let me look at my bookshelf. I reread an old book last two weekends ago called The Ragamuffin Gospel, Brenna Manning. I haven't read that in years.
I love that one. Yeah.
And it just met me again. I remember reading it and I was like, oh, there's still really good stuff in this one. So I'm kind of still working my way through it. But that one has really resurfaced in my life. Really.
That's
a
great one.
Yeah.
I just reread Ruthless Trust from him. I hadn't read it in over a decade. And I was like, man, this book, still great.
Yeah.
Still great.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about a product that you have told someone else it's so great they need to get it?
Oh, that's a tough one for me. Right now, it'll be in the category of camping and backpacking. My college age daughter loves backpacking, which is not my thing, but really wanted that. That's just what she loves more than anything. And I got to tell you, she got me some of the best. I was like, if we're going to do this, I need a really comfortable, mattress pad, you know, all the creature comforts. So that would be the category right now. Cause I was like, this is actually amazing. There's some really cool stuff now that makes it a lot more fun and a lot more enjoyable. I don't really have the brand names, but I was pretty impressed with some of the technology that has advanced since I was a kid. And my dad would drag us out in the mountains on backpacks.
I'm so impressed. She likes backpacking and you don't naturally. So you do it.
Yeah, I mean, how can you say no to that, you know?
I'll go to movies, I'll go to amusement parks with my kids, but I'm real indoorsy, you'd be hard-pressed to get me outside. I'm so impressed.
It was tough. I don't mind the day hikes. She really wanted to do a backpack, and I don't mind the day hikes. I got to say, so sleeping outside is not pleasant, but she got me, and she's tough, man. She's trucking along ahead of me, and I'm just sort of, but she did everything, and she got me, it was like a guide, and then she got me these little mattress pads that were really comfortable. I slept really well, so.
Okay, the more you know. I didn't even think it was possible.
What a summer. That's it. One night.
That's crazy. Okay, this is why I asked the question, because I learned so much.
Yeah.
Well, tell everyone where they can find you and pick up the new book.
Dr. Allison Cook is my handle on Instagram and Facebook. My website, drallisoncook.com. The book is anywhere books are sold. The audio's out. I read it. I'm excited about it. I'm really excited for women to get their hands on it. I really wanted it to be a resource for the kind of women exactly what we're talking about. So excited for people to find it.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I hope to have you on again and again.
I loved it. Thank you so much for having me.
Wasn't that great? You know what's happening. I'm giving away her books. Share it on social media. Tag me. Tag Allison, Dr. Allison Cook, and you will be entered to win a book. I love giving away books. It's one of my favorite things about having a podcast. Okay, let's talk about recommendations. I don't have a song this week. I don't have anything else special, but I do want to tell you about a movie. I was excited about this movie, but then I heard recently it wasn't going to be good. So I went into the theater with low expectations. If you go with low expectations, you're not going to be disappointed. Here's the movie. It's Amsterdam. Imagine a concept for a movie That sounds truly amazing. It's loosely based on a true story of three friends who uncover a plot by fascists in 1933. That's very cool, right? You bring in amazing stars. Christian Bale, Margot Robbie, John David Washington, Robert De Niro. Literally everyone's in this movie. That's the problem. Sometimes you get a movie where everyone's in it and it's just not going to be a good movie. Unfortunately, this is the case. The plot was just a muddled mess. I saw it with Jack, who's 21, and James, who's 16. And I leaned over, I sit in the middle of them. I leaned over to each of them in the middle and was like, this is a mess, but I like it. And they felt the same way. We drove home, you know, kind of processing it. Like, yeah, the plot was weird. It was all over the place. It was visually pretty. It was interesting, but it just wasn't a great movie. I think the Rotten Tomatoes is in the 30s, which is a really bad sign. I would give it a 5 out of 10. Go to the theater to see it. If you're like us and you like to see almost every movie except horror movies, I'm not going to see that. But you like, and I don't see rom-coms, but that's a whole different discussion. Go to the movie theater if you like to see all movies in that genre. And you have, like me, a movie membership, so you can see a movie every day for free. Go see it. Otherwise, it can wait to be rented. It's not delightful. Now, it is rated R. I took my 16-year-old because I think it's rated R because there's some scenes from World War I, like in a surgery room, that's a little bit bloody. But other than that, it's not bad. You can take a 16-year-old. Easy peasy. So that's your warning. Amsterdam, see it or not. Yeah. But all the stars are delightful. Christian Bale is genius in everything he does. Margot Robbie is luminous, and John David Washington, I'll see anything he's in. So, yeah, take it with a grain of salt. Now, remember, I don't know, a couple of months ago, I asked you to start leaving reviews. And I said, here's the thing. I need 5 stars. I need something in the review. And it doesn't really matter what the review is. Work in that I have a tale. And it was kind of my little joke with you. Well, you have really outdone yourself. There's lots of new reviews, lots of different versions of me having a tale. I'm going to read them for the next few weeks. Here's one from Marla. This is fantastic. She said, I love the Allie Worthington podcast and her books. She's an amazing Christian author and has provided me with so many tools to develop myself and others. I just don't understand how she can ride all those roller coasters with that tale. Well done, Marla. Well done. This is kind of our inside joke. I think a couple of years ago, I asked everyone to put in that I have a second belly button. So if you look back through the reviews through the years, it's pretty funny. But I just want to say to everyone that's left a review already, thank you. I don't know why Apple works this way, but Apple really cares about reviews and it'll help Apple show the show to more people. I love the I love the humor. I love that we're going in and you guys are adding a tale in a really interesting way to the review. It is a delight. So I'm going to be reading these for the next few weeks. So thank you so much for doing that. Okay, that is it for us this week. I love that we get to spend this time together. I love that you invest in yourself. This week, you're really investing in your emotional health and your spiritual health by listening to this conversation and learning from Dr. Cook. I know I learned a lot. I'm sure you did too. I want you to know I believe in your dreams, and I know that you're making an impact on this world for good. It's why you're here every week. I know that God created you to stand strong and bring something special and something unique to this world that only you can bring. So keep stepping up, keep showing up, and keep loving well, because you cannot break a woman who gets her strength from God. I love being a small part of coaching and equipping you every week. I'll be back with you next Monday, and I hope you have a great day.